Yeah.
M-O-O-R-E.
M-O-O-R-H-E-A-D.
Okay. When were you born?
1950, the 1st of March.
Where?
Charleston, wet vagina.
Okay.
I mean, West Virginia.
Tell me about some experiences in your life.
I'm an addict.
Tell me a little bit about the worst experience you had.
Worst experience I had was not knowing I was an addict and that there was anything I could do about it.
You said the oddball thing?
Oh, well, yeah.
Come on, this is here. Put the paper down and let's talk. Alright? And then I'm going to take your picture and stuff, and we're going to have a committee meeting.
What? I don't know if I'm real comfortable with this whole situation here with this, I mean, I don't mind.
Just don't take it so serious, alright?
Don't take it so serious.
It's all spiritual. So, tell me a little bit about
it's
your
all
life.
Spiritual.
Yes, tell me a little bit about your life and coincidence and that when you're talking about
well,
career.
I'm a child of privilege and I spent my whole life in a fantasy. Never had any limits imposed on me. Certainly not self-imposed. Was raised by an only child mother who was spoiled rotten and a father who was mentally abused by his father and made to feel less than. Always lived in the shadow of his older brother. My grandmother died. She drank herself to death after being a teetotaler for 31 years.
Let's hear about you.
Well, you took 23 chromosomes from the sperm cell of my father and 23 chromosomes from the egg cell of my mother, and you put them together, and that was the seminal influence in my life. Funny thing about it was, one of them chromosomes was lit up with neon, had addict, 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 addict flashing. And, then, you know, my family was just, I got two sisters. My family life was never uncomfortable, really, but it was never warm. Not much affection. Not much throwing the baseball, going fishing, and all of that kind of rah-rah kind of stuff. My placidity, what little of it that I had, was bought. Until that no longer seemed to work.
What does placidity mean?
Just appeasing me, making me calm or behave or whatever. Domestic tranquility. Which there wasn't really very much of because the earliest recollections that I have were, you know, very addict type events. You know, just like conning and manipulating and running away and breaking and entering and lying and rock fights and staying out all night and feeling alone and skipping kindergarten and, you know, sitting in the back of the room in first grade and the front of the room in second grade, next to the teacher's desk, I mean, and back by myself in the back of the room in the first grade. I never felt like I belonged even back then. I was a classroom clown, always making jokes and causing trouble, always in the principal's office, seeking attention. Gifted addict child. of course nobody knew what that was. I entered into therapy the first time for a while, child psychology, about age 6. Then that seemed to go on and on and on and on and on until, with varying intensities, up until the time I was 13, I ran away from home and lived underneath the boardwalk in Virginia Beach for 3 months. Got put in Tidewater detention home, wouldn't tell them who I was. Got tired of getting the shit beat out of me there and split. Told them who I was, my dad came and got me. Went to military school, tried to get kicked out, but they always saw all this potential in me and were unwilling to kick me out, so I eventually ended up setting a school record for demerits. I had learned at a very early age, you know, how to get attention by fucking up. And it's all right, it's cute, you know, because I had a nice smile and, you know, people generally liked me and I was fairly intelligent and not malicious in those attempts to get, for the most part, malicious. And burnt the neighbor's house down, and not really. I set it on fire, though.
I did, too.
And killed a cat when I was 6 years old by stuffing dirt in its mouth until it died. Always felt bad about that until I got clean and did some inventories. I think we all get the feeling who we are pretty early in life. So my parents signed away their parental rights, gave power of attorney to a behavior modification school when I was about 13 through 16. It consisted of physical abuse, group therapy 3 times a week, individual therapy 2x a week. It masqueraded as a school, but really it was the only option between there and state school for boys. I reached that point well before my active using accelerated to the point of no return. There I smoked weed for the first time. I found out how easy it was to pretend to be, to go into a catatonic state and be able to withdraw. I learned, read books on psychiatry, and of all the shrinks that ever saw me, none of them had the same diagnosis because I fucking played games with all of their heads. I had as many different diagnoses as I have doctors in my past. Let's see, my first grade teacher wrote on my report card, "David, procrastination is thy name." My third grade teacher wrote on my report card, "David could talk a Philadelphia lawyer out of anything." These are just to point up, you know, the disease was present. Fourth grade, I set a state record for reading books that still stands. Tested. Certificates of merit. In fifth grade, the teacher had bad breath and I made D minuses all the way through. Sixth grade, I made all A's and B's. Seventh grade, I went to hell. Blew up the incinerator in the junior high school with the principal looking at me and he threw me out. And went to military school and set the school record there for demerits. And then it was the school for incorrigibles. And Sylvester Stallone was one of my classmates. He went to the same place I did. He was a ward of the state, court ordered. After that, I kind of manipulated, tried to get out, got out. It was going to go, I escaped through sports. I was an excellent athlete. never picked up a basketball until the ninth grade, and the summer before the ninth grade, and made the junior varsity team, and mid-season got to the varsity, and the next year started in that school, and we were Keystone Conference champions in basketball, which was some loose amalgamation of private schools and some public schools. I wanted to go. I had these dreams of being like a basketball star for West Virginia University, and I was good at it. And so I kind of manipulated to get to go to high school in my hometown, and I was ineligible. And I was ineligible to play because I didn't attend school there for a year. It didn't dawn on me that I could. Sit out a year and practice. I wasn't into anything like that by then. I'd already spent that summer in Haight-Ashbury, San Francisco. So what I did was I skipped the first 5 weeks of school and just showed up the homeroom and then went and got loaded every day out in the woods. Charged a case of beer a day to my family's charge account and went out in the woods and drank the beer. So, and smoked reefer, and I had my own apartment because my parents still didn't want me around. And we got crystal methadrine by the jar from the hospitals, and we broke into pharmacy supply warehouse and got 500,000 blue morphine, blues as they were called, or new morphine. We used to give them away, and they finally, people were killing each other over them by the time they were getting ready to be done. So I was just getting loaded, man, and I got called into the office one day at homeroom, and there wasn't nobody there as I came back from school to get my books. And to get on a bus and go home. It seems like my homeroom teacher, which was the drama teacher, took a shine to me, and I was given a choice by the principal, either audition for a part in a senior class play or get kicked out of school. Go up there and sing that song or be kicked out of school. So I went up and sang the song, and I got the lead in my senior class play, Little Abner. My co-star in that play, leading lady, had the lead in the Pirates of Penzance Roadshow a couple of years ago, and is currently a working actress and singer on Broadway. And anyway, we got...
What do you do right now? What's your occupation?
What do I do right now? I'm a semi-retired carpenter. So, at any rate, that was about the only thing that kept me going to school. And I went to school and passed out joints in the smoking area because I knew I had them over the barrel and they wouldn't kick me out. The day for the play came and I was nowhere to be found. So the entire senior class went out combing the hills and hollows around where I lived looking for me. They finally found me about 45 miles away from home in a log cabin, loaded on sauce and Nembutal, sauce being Robitussin AC. So I finally got home 3 hours before I was supposed to go on stage that night for the first night of the play. Fear of failure, fear of success, who knows? I don't know what it was. Addiction. So, it went on. It was real good. I didn't muff any lines. The girl got jealous. The next night she fed me a whole bunch of miscues, and I just looked at her, made an obvious break of character, and like looked at her with a real weird look on my face and went on with my own lines where they were supposed to be. the governor was there. He asked us to do a special command performance for him. I got a scholarship to college for the highest talent award in acting at West Virginia University, but I never graduated high school because they threw me out immediately after the play. So I went back to California. I got out of the car on Fell Street in San Francisco, short hair, pack slung over my back, already knew what dope was. And already been shooting dope, already been, you know, my apartment in town was a dope haven for people from the age of my age to 50 years old were there at any given time from all over the country. It was the center for dope in my hometown. I was shooting speed and shooting Merc, which is USP cocaine that they used in hospitals. We would get, like I say, jars of it and hashes from New York and Columbus and acid from Cincinnati over on Calhoun Street. So I went back anyway to California. And I slammed the door, got out of the car, walked across the street, and this guy with hair down to his waist comes up to me, gets and stands right in front of me, takes a nickel bag out of his pocket, sticks it in my pocket, and says, "Welcome to San Francisco, brother." So I knew I'd hit the promised land. And I walked on up to Haight Street, which is about six blocks up the hill from where I got out. And got to the street and seen freaks of all different kinds and people just walking around passing out dope, and it was absolutely wild. I loved it. Again, I was home. And I went to the park and, you know, somebody gave me a hit of acid, and I watched the fog come in, and took this girl, took me home, and we got laid, and that's where I stayed. And I stayed there until December 18th, 1970. Chris asked me to tell you about an experience. I went to a party, a special party for the Grateful Dead at the old Fillmore. Not the Avalon, but the old Fillmore Auditorium on Fillmore Street. And went to a friend's house, and they were going out of town for the weekend up to the Russian River. And they left me alone in the apartment. And I came back from that and was sitting around, and all of a sudden I started to feel strange, you know. And it was real weird, you know. It's like a out of body going through past lives experience. As I sat there in the chair, looking out the window, all the buildings started to suck up into the side of my third eye, and I watched the San Francisco Bay Area return to forest, and I watched the glaciers come and go, and I watched the fire and the steam of the planet and being created, and then went out into the black, totally aware the whole time. Aware of everything around me. Just that seems like I became spirit. And I touched down. I was an Oriental. I was a common laborer. I was a prince. I was a king. I was a religious leader or something. You know, some of these things were just not exactly clear. They were so fantastic. For me being it, you know, I mean, being fanned with big fans by servants and attended to, and jewels and robes and velvet, and you know, it was like going through all my past lives or something, or somebody else's past lives, who knows. I don't attribute a hell of a lot of significance to the whole thing today. And then I shot back into the void again, the black, still conscious all the while of these changes and this transition, and I was like, all I was aware of was me in this black, and I kept, and it was like crossing paths with a kind of a silver gold radiating light that had a high pitched frequency to it, and by the time that we were moving in different directions, this light in my consciousness, and when we came directly parallel to one another, we started moving towards one another. As I got closer, I was able to make out the words, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am. And I became one with that energy. And I saw nothing, yet everything. I felt nothing, yet everything. It was the most peaceful, blissful experience during the course of being with that spirit. I would say that I experienced a actual, or maybe fantasy, visit to what the City of Light that it talks about in Revelation must look like. It seemed like I communed with God and the spirits, and you know, and Jesus and Moses, and you know, Confucius and Buddha, and all of the great spirits, I guess. It's the only way I can describe it. And then I guess it was time for me to go. Coming back to this plane of existence, I mean, being in the human form on Earth, coming back from where I was absolutely the most excruciating pain over every inch of my body and every nerve. And it was like the end of the movie 2001 with the colors and the and all of that type of stuff. And but it was also like being drawn down a tiny little straw with pieces of glass and razor blades in it that were pointed in the opposite direction from me, and I was being ripped and pulled and torn and cut and slashed, and and I woke up still sitting in the same chair with a baseball, softball size charred black scar and a deep hole in my leg, and it didn't hurt. I have no idea where it came from. I never left the house, as far as I know, at all during this experience, which lasted probably about 9 hours. So I looked down at my leg. I said, what the hell is this? I had to use the bathroom, so I got up and went into the bathroom and looked at myself in the mirror, and my skin was all wrinkled and dangling like a 90-year-old man, and my hair was white. I don't know what any of this means, if anything at all. Needless to say, the experience was very unsettling. I wandered around in search of answers for what it was that went on with me. For about the next 10 years, in a more or less conscientious manner. I mean, I went to the Edgar Cayce Foundation in Virginia Beach, and I studied with people from the ARE, and I had trance readings done and things like that. And a lot of those readings and stuff confirmed, you know, I never told anybody about the experience. I found that there were readers and things like that, and they, in their readings, found the similar things. And I had people walk up to me over those years and say, I know you. I remember you in Atlantis, and I know you. I remember you in, and I remember you in. And I was always kind of amazed when it happened, but never, you know, owing to what it was that I've been through, surprised. And usually those individuals and I bonded really fast. There was something special between us. But just like most people, you know, that have such high ideals that they're unable to live up to because they're human, we quickly couldn't live with each other's shortcomings, and usually parted ways in a very negative sort of fashion. I got saved and found out about that city of light in reading the Bible from cover to cover, and I talked to people down off of acid, and this preacher came by and prayed over me, and I was loaded on hash, and I got a rush from the tip of my toes to the top of my head, and when that was done, I was completely straight, and I quit using everything and studied the Bible for about 8 months and drank nothing. And that's where I learned about total abstinence for the first time. That was 1972. I was married and got divorced in 72, and went out on the beach and looked up and said, God, I know you understand, and smoked a joint. And I never looked back from that point on. The only prayers I prayed or the thoughts that I gave God from that point on was when I took too big of a shot. I was devastated by the loss of that relationship. But it clarified a lot of things for me in terms of the past experiences. I mean, people would say to me, David, you are half in and half out of your body. And I would meet a Buddhist, and a Buddhist would tell me the same thing and say, there's an old saying in our religion, before nirvana, chopping wood, carrying water. After nirvana, chopping wood, carrying water. What are you going to do now? And I had no answers. I was in the throes of this disease. I mean, I had some fun, and I snatched the brass ring a few times in my life, only to fall on my face in the gutter and knock myself unconscious and have the ring roll into the gutter, you know, and down into the sewer. Music business, playing career, club management company, you know, things of that nature. Made a lot of money selling dope. Lived in 12 or 15 different cities in the course of 10 years. Hit bottom in New York City for the umpteenth time. Living in a burned out building in Harlem, shooting $1,000 worth of coke a day. Unable to keep 20 cents in my pocket, panhandling for wine and Wild Irish Rose. And I did that every day for a year and a half. Ended up 132 pounds in Port Authority. Called my mother, I'm going to kill myself. She says, no, don't. Come home. I said, I can't, I don't have any money. It's November. I was barefoot, Salvation Army, pair of jeans and a flannel shirt. My eyes were sunken back in my head. I had no gums and I was a walking pin cushion. But I knew how to die, and I was going to do it tomorrow. So they prepaid me a ticket, and my dad met me. I couldn't leave the terminal. I didn't have anything to go get anyway. I got home, and he freaked out and bought me a new set of clothes and took me to a motel and got my hair cut and made me shave. And my mother took one look at me and broke into tears. And there was no way for me to hide my tracks. And they said, "We never knew it was like this for you." And I said, "Well, it's been like this for almost 15 years. I wonder, you know, as low as I had been and as many bottoms as I have hit, if I had heard about or attended a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, what would have happened?
I don't know if I can mention Narcotics Anonymous in my book.
Well, a 12-step recovery.
So what are we going to do?
Fellowship.
How are we going to overcome that problem? How are we
going to
overcome the
problem?
Just a 12-step fellowship.
A 12-step fellowship of recovering addicts. Yeah, so, you know, I was hoping that... I mean, it's an interesting exercise, and certainly mental masturbation, and I'm glad I'm here now. With 4.5 years clean. But, so I laid on the couch, eating and sleeping for 2 months, and put on 20 pounds, and then one day I felt good enough to go to the liquor cabin. I went to the liquor cabin, because I was all jammed up. My old man was on my back, my mother was on my back. He's laid on the couch here for 2 months. I could have laid on the couch for the rest of my life, and never gone back outside, but they were forcing me to go back outside. Forcing me to take a look at myself, and I couldn't do that. I couldn't go back into life. I didn't want to go back into life. So I hit the liquor cabinet and I started drinking from dawn to dark. And my dad had a make work job for me, which I took a case of beer to every day. Anyway, I stole $50 from my father one night to get loaded, and that was the day before I got clean. And, because I knew that, see, the end of the road had come, so I was going to be kicked out and had to go back to New York to the dope man and sure death, you know, because I wasn't going to go through that shit again. So that late one night, I tripped over a guy's car. This later to end up being my first NA sponsor, and found myself on my way to a meeting the next day and told him I was an addict and I was going to go home and get loaded and think about it. Today, the next day I surrendered. I got clean. I've been clean ever since. It hadn't been easy. There's been a lot of, I think the most heavy part of it was just facing myself in the mirror and looking at myself and going, "I don't like you." And the answer that came back to me from all you people was, "So what are you going to do, change or die?" And I couldn't even answer that question when I got clean. It took me about a minute to answer the question positively, "Do you want to stay alive?" I went, "Well, I guess so." So I was a real sick pup, but since I've been here, you know, the promise of freedom that's talked about in the book, More Will Be Revealed, and in our fifth tradition, has come true for me. All of those oddball things that happened to me in my life were God's way of uniquely preparing me to be of service to humanity and to carry His message and to do His work for society. Today I know that my business is recovery and my life, the results of my life are none of my business. And I've just gotten surrendered and gotten out of the way and allowed you people to, you know, show me what to do. To ask to be shown where my behavior is deficient. To ask to be shown, you know, tough stuff. And the interesting thing about it is all of the things that I studied about God and religion and all of that stuff crystallized with my understanding of the Narcotics Anonymous program. I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever, no feelings of uneasiness, that I'm absolutely where I am supposed to be to do the most good to humanity and for myself and to be of service to God and society. I guess as long as I stay clean and keep, you know, helping people stay alive and find a path to God for themselves, you know, which is what we do, and it's what all great spiritual leaders and teachers throughout time have done, is save a life, point them to a spiritual path, and tell them they have a choice. All my needs have been taken care of as a result of not trying to take care of my own needs, if that makes any sense. But just finding that word only in our steps and just relying on that word. You know, like, only knowledge of His will and power to carry it out. It's the only place where it talks about power in our steps. That there's a principle there that we can utilize it long before we formally get there, and that is, I don't want no recovery. I don't want no surrender. I don't want no humility. Please don't give me a job. Just for today, I will not have a plan. I will try to find out only what knowledge of Your will for me is and power to carry it out. And by seeking the will of God, I've been able to be freed from my own will. Like it talks about in the third step. It's interesting how all these things wrap around one another and complement and fulfill one another. And today, how that has occurred in my life is a subject of an ongoing literary work involved with writing the steps. And some people call it confused and techno-recovery. I call it techno-recovery, more or less as a joke, because it sounds so technical. But I bet my life on this, and I have a sponsor that tells me, if you bet your life on something, you better make sure you know what it is. And so I rest in that word only today, and I don't play with what it is. I know that the God that I understand, I got high with Him for 22 years. So I better surrender to the God that we understand, the one that works. That's about all I got. Is there any other thing? You know, that's a synopsis of Grateful Dave's life.
I'm gonna have to delete all the NA stuff. Alright?
No, I didn't know that.
I can't. It's our tradition. I can't publish
NA. You can't publish the word.
I know, I can't publish the word, but. I'm also looking to put like a page or two, so I'm gonna have to cut a lot of shit out.
No, there ain't no more than a couple of pages typewritten on that anyway.
Really?
Think. 3 or 4 maybe.
3 or 4? I'm only looking for one.
Yeah.
But that was great, Dave. Thanks a lot. What's the date today?
Clean date.
Today is August 16th, 1988. And you got clean when?
March 17th. 84.
And what's your address and phone number? Permanent address?
PO 668, Charleston, West Virginia 25323. No phone.
Thanks, Dave.